what's involved here? I said, well, look at it this way. Yeah, all of you need to think about making mission trips, but look how many things have happened in your church because you've been involved in mission trips. Like I mentioned already, evaluating a missionary that comes and visits, that's a major thing. What about if you have to change pastors or you have to help be involved in voting for a new pastor? How much is it going to affect you that commitment that that pastor has to missions?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That helps you make a decision on the future leadership. What about business meetings when you're sitting down saying, well, are we going to support a missionary or not? Or a project or things like that. What about motivating others to become more involved in missions?
Yeah.
Brother Allen just was with me about a month ago. One of the things I've noticed here is when he got back, he was really motivating everybody about his trip. He was talking about it.
Man.
That was one of the goals we had of taking you on the mission trip. Brother DJ's kids will be in January. And I've got reasons for him wanting to go with me. I want him to see things and broaden his horizons and understanding what God's doing in a lot of different other areas. And that's why I want him to go. I'm very excited about it. I think he is too. He's talking about it. And I think it will impact not just his church, I think it will impact his family. He'll understand why his daughter, when she was in Africa, what she was going through. It's going to do a lot of things. So, in some ways, just about everything is positive. There's some negatives, but everything is positive about doing all these type of trips. So that's why I recommend it. Now, one other thing I want to cover here, and that is, besides the mission trips, one thing that really concerns me in our, this is not so much recruitment, but it does have to do with problems of attrition and things like that, is preparation of the missionary for the field. Within the independent Baptist circles, we've got a lot of different concepts and philosophies, and some people believe that, you shouldn't do a lot of training, especially academic training, things like that. And I realize that. My father was not, in his training of the leaders that he did not do it academically. He did it more through discipleship, apprenticeship, things like that. It was more hands-on, subjective, those type of things. And there's a balance between the two. I don't think you should ever set aside discipleship and those aspects of training.
Right.
But there is still some needs of preparation. One of the biggest things that concerns me is I'm seeing a lot of people going to the mission field unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much unprepared for the technical and academic things, unprepared spiritually. And I blame pastors for this. Because pastors are trying to push them onto the field before they're ready. And I remember when I was preparing to go to the mission field, I was already married, I had a daughter, and I was chomping at the bit. I want to get there. And my pastor said, don't, you're not quite ready. I wouldn't listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
I went. And I was wrong. Learned my lesson. To pay attention to what he was saying. I'm very thankful that my son has been very sensitive to my recommendations, and he's followed it. And plus, Brother Jared Tumble was going down there working with him. They've also been that way. And I'm very grateful for that. But that is one thing that really concerns me, is that in our zeal to get the job done, and I understand why that should be done, but in our zeal, we go unprepared, and then it costs us.
Yeah.
Like anything else, when you do something unprepared, it becomes more expensive sometimes. Mm. We got to go backtrack and redo and make up for all those kind of things. I made the analogy of Special Forces and military with this. So I was going through a study. How much time do they spend in preparing some of these Special Forces soldiers?
Mm.
Now, before they even get into the Special Forces program, a lot of them have to be in there at least a year, if not longer. They've already got to go through boot camp. They're already soldiers, so to speak. But then, if they're becoming an elite force, it's minimum of a year, most of the time 2 years. 60 to 80 weeks of training training before they're actually getting experience even in the area. It's a lot. And that's very intensive training. Of course, in the elite forces, a lot of it is physical training that they require. But it's also a lot of mental. And they go through it, and if you start studying and looking at it, and I was looking at the list of all the different courses they had to go through and things that are involved, it's pretty intensive. Why should we think that we should do that also in our preparing of our missionaries?
Sir.
We need to take the time.
Amen.
In some ways, it might take, after you finish Bible school, 7 or 8 years. It's kind of like getting a PhD or a doctorate. That's what's involved. Even, let's say that you've gone through a Bible school and finished that. And in the Bible school you start. What's going to be involved? Well, you got to do deputation, right?
Yeah.
How long is deputation? At least a year and a half if you're really good. And the Lord will bless you. Minimum probably 2 years. Am I right, Brother Jeffrey? You've seen, and it's getting longer. Not unusual to even go up to 3 years. Brother Jared Tunnell, who's going to Argentina, he took out 9 months to go to language school. He's back on his road now, but he's been going at it for 3 years almost. Of course, 9 months was for language school. He's hoping to be done by early next year, getting ready to go to the field. A lot of work. That's deputation. Now, you, after you come out of school, you went to BBTI, did you? 9 months?
Let's see. I graduated Bible College 2000, started deputation 2002, and of the 2 years on deputation, half that was at BBTI.
BBTI, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. Like I said, Brother Jared went down to the border for language school. Then, when you get to the field, you go to language school, right? Thai is not an English language. It's a very rough language. Different alphabet, everything.
Oh, yeah.
How long in the language school?
Due to BBTI's training, it was a good year, but it would have been...
You were shortened to 1 year.
Right. It would have been probably at least 2 years.
2 years if you hadn't gone to BBTI, so BBTI added to that helps you out. Plus, if you go to any other languages, it helps you in the future, too. So that's very important. So 1 year before you can even function in the language. Function.
Right.
That doesn't mean you're effective yet. It's going to be another 2 or 3 years before you're effective. All right? That's what it just takes. What's really bad when missionaries go to the field is they watch their children do it in half the time it takes them to do it.
Less than half.
I remember. I was 4 years old. I started learning my language playing with the other kids on the streets of Mexico City. My parents were going to language school, and one day, Dad said, "Now, how do you say this word?" Asking me, a 5-year-old.
That's good humility, though.
Does that happen to you and your kids or not?
It's amazing how they pick that stuff up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My grandson, Lucas, right now, he jumps between the two, and what's really funny is, he was here earlier this year, and I talked to Spanish, and he says, "You speak English, I'm not speaking that language." He knows the difference, he's 5 years old.
I asked him, Brother Bruce, I asked Lucas one time, I said, "Lucas, how do you say watermelon in Spanish?" And he says, "Watermelon."
One of the greatest things that we're missing is what happened with a number of missionaries around us that spent time with your dad.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
That apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brother Jeffrey, you spent some time with you around. Do you have any trips with my dad or not?
I did not make any trips. Just the times when he was in Fargo, but I did spend some time with Robert Creech.
Okay, Robert Creech and Tom.
Yep.
Well, they were influenced a lot by the indigenous principle.
I think that's invaluable, those apprenticeships.
Jeffrey, how much time did you spend with my dad?
A lot. I mean, he trained me one-on-one. It was amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are very amazing things.
Yeah.
That's what the Lord used. The Lord used the one-on-one.
That's
he can't set aside.
A good example is John Mark failed.
Uh-huh.
But he got with Barnabas, and then he was valuable to Paul's ministry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't set that aside. So one of the things that I recommend to all the missionaries is spend some time with someone else to help you out when you're there.
Yeah.
Even though you might not agree with them completely. Even if it's international in some ways. That's why I told my son when he went to Argentina, go to Buenos Aires first, there's a national pastor there, help him out, and just you spend some time there. What are you doing? You're learning culture. He already knew the language, but his wife didn't, so his wife had I was amazed how quickly she picked up language. She's doing well with her language.
But she's musical and she's a woman.
Yeah. But she ladies have the capacity of learning languages better than men. This is very true. Here's my wife who's got a master's in Spanish and teaches it. So I can't argue with her.
If you're musical and if you're a woman, you have advantage.
Because of my experiences, I get involved a lot in language learning and teaching language learning and how to, not actually teaching the language itself, but the tools for language learning and understanding differences in language. I do, both my wife and I, for years, we've always been involved in that because we're very much aware of what's involved in language learning. Because it's more than just words. It's culture. There's just so much. And then as we travel throughout Latin America, even though they all speak Spanish, we're constantly amazed at how we have to relearn in other countries how to talk with them because they just talk differently, even though it's the same language.
Sure.
Just like if you're from America trying to go to Australia.
Right.
Right, brother? Or New Zealand.
Or from Maryland and go to California.
Yeah.
Different language.
It always, that's all part of it. And that's why you spend that time. And the reason I'm getting to all this is, all this preparation, if you think about it, it's a long time.
Yeah.
You're looking at something 8 years. 3 or 4 years in the States, 3 or 4 years on the field, before you finally say, okay, now I can finally get something done. Now I have effectiveness. We look at that and say, that's just horrible. Well, wait a minute. We don't think nothing about a doctor after he gets out of high school. How long does it take to become a doctor after you get out of high school?
10 years.
8 years.
Or longer.
Or longer. What's the difference?
Welder or 100 other things. I mean, it just takes time.
It just takes time. And so that's why we just had to understand that's... And see, in the business world, they realize this. They say it's just going to take the effort.
Yeah.
You take it. We should do the same thing. We should be willing to pay that price, whatever it takes. That's part of it. But then we get into the problem of attrition. How many are we losing? Now, we talked about washouts and the needs for winnowing and getting the best, things like that. I realize that, but still, it's still very, it really bothers me. It breaks my heart to see that we're losing so many. And I think that we need to make the effort to retain as much as we can. One of the things that I was studying as we're talking about recruiting in the business world, and that they said that some of these businesses have not, that they're really making bad decisions because they're trying to get rid, for instance, my son, he works for a very large multinational company, and just recently they had a man who'd been working for 27 years with the company with tremendous experience. They really knew what was going on. My son really respected him. He was my son's boss for a long time, but it wasn't at that time. Because he wasn't following the new direction of the company, they fired him. What did they lose? They lost a lot, really. Now, he was already 67. He probably was not too far away from retirement, but still, it was not a good situation the way they got rid of him. But it shows a major problem in the management of that company that they don't know the value of what they've got, so to speak. And because of that, I'd be careful. I'm wondering, where's this company going? Because to replace them, how much is it going to cost? We were talking earlier about, you know, a pilot in the Navy, 30 years ago, $1 million. Elite forces, $1 million to prepare them. We talk about all the time. Well, what happens if you go through all that expense, and then a year or two later after that, they quit? Now, one of the goals is, well, if we have to, if there's someone that's not going to make it, if we get rid of them early, that's the best thing before the investment is made. But what really is bothering me is, at the latter part of the thing, how many we're losing. My son has been in Argentina for 4 years now. Over 4 years, he is talking about how many missionaries arrived there after he did and have left already. A study was made by a mission board about what is the attrition rate in missions. And they started from the moment someone surrenders to become a missionary, becomes prepared to become a missionary, deputation, all that, until the end of his first 3 or 4 year term after arriving in the field. And that period of time, 80% quit.
Wow.
4 out of 5.
80%.
Only 1 out of 5 makes it. Sounds just like what we were talking about earlier about those elite forces, how many wash out. That's not good. And the problem I'm seeing is, there are a lot of churches that are getting frustrated because of all the investment they make. And they say, we invested all this money and he leaves before he gets anything done.
Wow.
Because that's the point when they're becoming effective. Mm-hmm. It's a waste. And I think it's because of this, going back to this preparation here, we're not getting them prepared ahead of time to face what they're going to face, and therefore they get washed out pretty quickly. What are the reasons? And I know there's an interaction from right here. Why, and you, Jeffrey, you've been on the field for quite a while, so you've seen a lot of them quit, come and go. I have. Brother Kim, a few maybe. Y'all been around for a while too, Brother Penny. What do you think, give me some reasons why, and I'm not talking about what they say they're quitting, the real reason, the real reason behind a lot of them not staying on the mission field.
Because they're not called.
Sometimes it's problems with your kids.
That's not really the reason. Not really. Yes, sir.
I mean, I've just several things come to mind, but some of it's legitimate is health reasons.
Health. Okay, that's one. That's good. That is a very, very common one. Although, there are times when they use this to hide something else.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are definitely...
There are legitimate health reasons. Well, the time of the day right now, I'm not able to do much because of health.
Family.
That one's I want to get to. Family. Probably the number one. And what area do we cover this in family? I want to get into this a little bit more detail, because it's not just your immediate family. It's not just husband and wife and children. It's also parents of them and everything else. One of the things that I tell missionaries when they began... And then when they began getting ready to go, I told them, you're going to get resistance from areas that you least expected. For instance, if you have family who are unbelievers, and you say, I'm going to be a missionary, you expect them to resist it. Right? Yeah, they don't understand. What if your father is a pastor? He's going to be happy I'm a missionary. Well, no, not really. I have many, many times seen this, where the son of a pastor surrenders to the mission, and guess who's the most against him becoming a missionary? His own pastor father. And it blindsides them. They never expected that. It happened in the church. We had Brother Hugh Atkinson was a pastor, and his son Larry was the assistant pastor, music director. He started going to Africa. You thought, wonderful, yeah. He and I were the best friends. We'd do mission trips together. We had all this stuff. And when I heard that he wanted to go to the mission field, I understood, because his heart was in missions. Then surprising one bit. But guess what we had to face? His mother was upset. She was not happy that she was going to lose her grandchildren. And we had to deal with it. And here, Brother Hugh and his wife were very mission-minded. But when it comes to, well, not our kids, not our grandkids, everyone else can go to the mission field, but not mine. That's not good. It's a major problem. Yep. It's not just what we think about, but yes, on the mission field, then, you've got the major situations of, I've seen, a wife will make a break. Oh, that's the most important. In fact, when I was in college, and I was interested in finding a wife, and I was doing some dating, and didn't know, one of the things that I had as a standard, you can ask my wife, I would get to know a young lady, become interested in her, and I'd tell her, okay now, if you're interested in me, if you realize this, I'm going to become a missionary. If you don't become a missionary wife, this stops right here. And that happens many times. She said, okay, well, I don't want to be a missionary. Okay, that's it. I'm not interested in you anymore. Ask Probe. I told her that before we started dating. Because I had realized this was a very important thing to me.
But it was... It was also a decision that you had settled in your heart that you were going to do regardless of anything that got in the way.
My courtship. Before I started my courtship.
And?
Dang, it was just something I had to decide.
It's good.
Because I knew this was a problem.
Yeah.
Because I, as a young person, had seen it so many times. I had seen missionaries come work with my father, and the woman never learned the language. She stayed in her home, isolated, and would never go out. She was scared to talk to anyone. And how long did they last? 2 to 3 years, they're going home. I saw it. Time and time again. Am I right? You see, Noah in Brazil. How many times do you see those kind of situations?
Many.
It was essential that it was a team.
Yeah.
And?
God doesn't just call the man. He calls the entire family. Not just the, him and his wife, even the children.
Right.
That's why I get back to this thing. But I was so surprised when those other missionary kids were not interested in becoming missionaries themselves. Why? Because that's not how they approached the ministry. I thought, in some ways, what I saw was the father looked at being in ministry as a business, as a job. And he never brought it home. Well, that even applies to the pastor, too. If you know the pastor, then your family's not going to understand. In fact, you'll lose your family. Because God didn't just call you, He called your entire family. Everyone must be involved. And you be aware of that. I'm watching Brother Daniel, how his entire family is what? There's no way around it. Everyone's involved in church, right? It isn't just for the church services. It's, you live here. That's your life.
Good life.
Man. Great life.
And other people get, well, I wouldn't want that life. Well, now that you've had it, it's compared to what you used to have.
No.
And you can't compare it.
Yes, sir.
That's the way God wants us to be involved. He didn't just call the man. He calls the entire family. And so that's one of the keys of the family. Something else. Health, family. Yes, sir.
I think with the fluence, you say being in the United States and then going to another
culture
plus the
standard of living.
Yes, sir.
I'll be honest with you. I don't see that as a problem. You might think it would be, but I've noticed that most families are pretty resilient about that, especially if they know it's going to happen. That's usually not a reason for quitting. Yes, you miss home. And you might say culture shock, but that has nothing to do with affluence. You can live in the nicest home and live just as well as you have here and still have culture shock,
right,
which is something different. But it's not so much the affluence. It's not the standard of living. And if you understand what I'm saying here. I've not seen that to be a reason that often for causing someone to leave home. Now, on the other part of this, we're talking about the culture shock. I would use culture shock as a reason. And let me be very careful here when I use this term. We use the term culture shock, and it's a true term that allows, and it usually occurs 3 to 4 months after you arrive on a field, and you finally get to the point of you're comfortable with the people, you begin to understand, but it's also beginning to really grate on you the differences. Mm-hmm. That's what we call culture. You don't get culture shock when you get off the plane. That's just the novelty. That's not culture shock.
Right.
True culture shock occurs about 3 to 4 months after you've been in a place, and you get to the point of saying, I don't understand these people. I don't see why they think the way they think. It's stupid. I can't stand them anymore. That's culture shock. You can't stand their driving. You can't stand their food. When you first go to a place, everything, the newness of it is, oh, I want to have these new experiences. That's not, the differences of culture is not culture shock. Culture shock is when you are so frustrated with those differences that you can't stand them anymore.
Yeah.
It bothers you. But what I'm talking about here is even further than that. It's after the 3 or 4 months, no, this is going 2-3 years down the road, where you're getting to the point where you hate the people that you're working with.
Wow. Hmm.
I have dealt with this a lot. I was in Honduras and had a missionary. He'd been there for 20 years. And he told me, every one of them is a liar. My preacher boys, all of them, they're all liars. I said, then why are you here? When you have that attitude.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. And maybe we could use the culture clash. That would be a better term. Culture clash. Or another way I can say this is unwilling to adapt.
Yeah.
That's another term I can use for this. Unwilling to adapt to the culture. One of the things that I've learned about the blessings of living in another country is not only understanding why they do what they do, understanding that it's very valuable, understanding it makes sense to them, and if I start thinking like they do, it makes sense to me, and starting enjoying it to the point where, now, let me give you an example. I just saw a post from my daughter. My son was talking about the things he missed from the States while he's there in Argentina. Normal, that's what always happens. He's missing some things. But then he said, at the end of his post, he said, but on the other hand, there's some things about Argentina I really like too. You know, every culture you go to has both advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah.
Okay? One of the advantages of Argentina is beef.
Yeah.
If you like to eat beef, it is good and cheap and you have all you want.
That's a good reason.
I went with him to the butcher. We bought ribeye steaks for $2.40 a pound.
Best animal.
Filet mignons for $3 a pound.
Yeah.
And he bought 7 pounds. And we enjoyed it. Come to the States, you're not going to get that. And so we were talking about that. And my daughter replied to this post. She says, oh, yes. There's that pizza place in Tennessee, Alpha Honduras that I miss so much. That's what happens as you adapt. You understand what I'm saying? Brother Ken is from Korea. He's going there next month. Been a month over there. Very excited, I'm sure. Some things that you'll miss, right? Although you didn't really grow up there, but your wife, did she grow up there?
25 years.
She's going home, so to speak. Is she excited?
Oh, yeah.
She talking about all the foods that she's going to eat? All that? What if you end up being there for 6-7 months? You start grabbing all the Mexican food you miss. Right? Even after 1 month, you'll be there for 1 month.
Yes, sir.
At the end of the month, I guarantee you say, boy, I love some tacos right now. Some tortillas.
Some of those we had there the
last day. Yeah. That's normal. That's good. You're 2 feet in each culture, which should be. But I know some missionaries that never do that. I'm not changing. I was going into Romania one time. And I noticed that in the home that we were staying in, as soon as we got to the door, they took off their shoes and walked in the home with their stocking feet. And that's very common in Europe and some other places. That's a nice thing to do. And mainly they had carpets. And this was a formerly, they just got out of communism. I think they've been 6 months out of communism. So they still had a lot of the mentality of communism. One of the things in communist countries is you save everything you can. And what you have, you make sure you don't tear it up, because you never know if you'll get any more.
Right.
Well, they had really nice carpets and stuff like that. So in my mind, well, they're really worried about the wear of the carpets and stuff like that, so that's why they don't wear shoes in their home. And it was no problem with my dad and I. We took off our shoes and did it. And then we got together. There was a big group of us. It was about four or five preachers together on the trip, and we're all spread out on different homes. And so I talked to another one who's been a missionary in Australia for a long time, and I asked him, I said, well, in your home, did they take the shoes off the door? Yeah, but I'm not going to do it. And I thought, what's going on here? What does it hurt you to take off your shoes? Go to Thailand, right?
Yeah.
That's a very common thing in Thailand. You take off your shoes when you're going home, right? Or wherever you're going. That's just the way they do things. What's the problem with that? Well, at home we don't do that, so I'm not going to adapt.
No. I remember going to the, take Cameron to the doctor, and Marcia and I were with you. In front of the door at the doctor's office, there were just a big pile of shoes.
And figuring out who's the when you come out is a problem. And you go to, that's in Thailand too. Everywhere I go to Thailand, it's the same. Church before church. You have all these shoes outside of church. That's what I want to do. That's just one of the small things. And what happens here is when those things start to grate on you. And you say, one of the things that I find with missionaries is really the hard problem. David's going through this right now in Argentina. They're driving. How do they drive? They don't drive like America.
Yeah.
Well, you just have to adapt.
Other than that, in Mexico.
Well, in Honduras. And I fall into that tragedy myself. I get the point, I say, just wish they would, because they end up with an accident or something, and you wish that, boy, in America, we could solve this problem. But that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
My dad had a saying from Mexico City. He said, there's only two kinds of drivers, the quick and the dead. You were that quickly or you're dead.
Yes, why I think you were saying that a survey trip early on is very
important. Very important. Because it's going to tell you about all the things you're going to have to adapt to.
Right.
Yep.
Man. You're going to have to do it. Yes, sir.
But the thing is, too, just that survey trip, even if you have resistance or you see something that you balk at, that doesn't mean that it's a no. It means you've got things that you need to change.
If you have the awareness of it.
Yes.
And especially if you've got someone that's a good advisor or someone that says, look, I see this is something you can work on. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important that if you're preparing for the mission field, get all the information you can, be around other guys, talk to them. You know, at this mission conference, I don't know if you've noticed, the missionaries are sitting down there and we're talking about shop. You know someone when I say talk shop? Talking about our lives as missionaries. And we're constantly sharing all these kind of things. And the mission field is the same way. And sometimes you might have to have relationships with missionaries that are not even Baptists. That's not bad. Doesn't mean you're doing ministry with them, but at least you sit down and talk with them and talk about what are the things that they're facing. My son just recently we're having a big problem in transferring of funds. We're trying to figure out, we were talking about this. How are you going to, when he was in Buenos Aires, it wasn't a problem. He had some contacts there, walk into this office, write a check, give that check to them, and they give him the cash right away. It was nice. Get to Corrientes, 500 miles north, no contacts. There wasn't anyone that would do it for him. It was a problem. We worked for a year, which was 2 or 3 years on this. How do we work this out? Well, he contacted another missionary and said, look, this is what I'm doing. Oh, let's try. Oh, wow, it solved our problem. Thank God for the missionary that gave him that little key for information.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
One of the real keys is keep the main thing the main thing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Keep your focus.
Okay, there's one other thing I've touched here. Spiritual defeat.
Spiritual defeat.
And this can involve many different areas. You don't have regular church services because you haven't been got a group of Christians together with you. You're by yourself.
Yeah.
Your family is not having that church atmosphere. One of the things that's really great today is the internet.
Yeah.
And you have streaming services.
Yeah.
While I was in Argentina there this last month, we were streaming this. We streamed the funeral of Ms. Becky and all. What? Oh, that is. When I was on the mission field as a young, I remember in Ameca, not too far from Mexico City. We were in the farm there. We had a telephone, but the way you used it is you cranked it, and the operator would respond, and then you had to have the operator connect you to whoever you want to connect to. We had a telephone, but if that telephone rang, and it was a call from the States, it's who died. Mm-hmm. That's how rare you got telephone calls.
Yeah.
There was no communication.
Wow.
The main communication was the letters, the postal system.
Yes.
And it would take 1 to 2 weeks for the letter to get there. We had a post office box at the local post office, and that big wall of post office boxes, we call it the wailing wall. That's the reason we're going mail for mail. Because that was the most important thing to us, was mail. That's how we communicated. Nowadays, it's a lot different. Yes, sir.
I wanted to say on this that, and you're talking about the isolationism, that isolated feeling. I had that trip to Thailand, and I didn't really experience it. Why? Because I was working with a team of.
You were with a team of other Christians while you were there.
So I didn't have that problem,
mm-hmm.
which I can very well see if just one man is.
And see, that's why now my son is by himself.
Yeah.
Now he very quickly makes some relationships with the church there.
Man.
So we're glad to hear that. That's important.
Yeah,
it's very important. There are no other missionaries, American missionaries, around. They can't do that. But at least he's got some locals there. That is a very important thing.
Maybe more so for the wife.
Exactly. The wife is, and the children too. Now I was over there and I watched my grandson. And we'd get into this church, and there were some children the same age as he, and he's running off with him, blabbing in Spanish, just as comfortable and adapting as any one of them. And I thought, okay, this is what we want to see.
Yeah.
And this is important for him. They make an extra effort to send him to a little, like a preschool there, where he's around other Argentinian kids. All those things are important. All those things. But there's going to be a lot of aspects here. One of the things that I've cautioned, especially the pastors, is don't put a lot of pressure on your missionaries for quick results. I think one of the most defeating things for a missionary is he's got expectations back home that he's not meeting, and he feels frustrated because they're putting pressure on him. Well, how many souls have you had saved? Give me a report on this. I want to know if you're getting something done. And that pressure is so great that he's trying. And that what it causes a lot of times is false reports to satisfy them, or a feeling of I'm failing. And so we need to be very, very careful about that. That the missionary does not feel like he's got. And we have to understand that every different culture is going to be different as far as how God's going to be working in that culture. There are some cultures that people are very responsive. Latin America, as a whole, is a very responsive country. I feel very fortunate. It's not that hard. Argentina is not one of those. Argentina is one of the most, of all the, Argentina and Chile probably are the most difficult countries because they're very sophisticated, they're very educated, they're very materialistic. The people live very close to the same standard of living as we live here. So therefore, this is about as difficult as here. A lot of atheism, a lot of things like that. That's like going to Europe, too. So, we got to be careful. Well, this missionary, look what he's doing so quickly. Well, if you look at missionary biographies, you see some men that went 20 or 30 years before they got results. But then when God gave results, it's like a dam breaking open. God's faithful. So be patient.
It might be the next generation that sees the fruit of
this. Exactly right.
Right.
You're laying a foundation.
Right.
And what's a foundation? Well, you can't see much when you're laying a foundation, right? It's all underground. But how important is it?
Very.
You've already been there, what, 60 years? 70 years or so?
Yeah.
You're getting to the point now where you're really seeing some stuff. In fact, it's working without you, right? That's what you want. But now things are changing. When you go back, it's going to be totally different than when you first went.
And you do need to be careful, too, even with, once you sometimes realize what other missionaries are doing, and you may see their reports, but then you go and visit them and actually see what they're doing versus their reports. And just some of the trickery, you know, just buying people to come to their church, bribing them with different things. And yeah, you go there and they could have a crowd, but then the next week when you're not giving away TVs or giving away food or this or that, and they're not there. So, I mean, it's to be...
Well, I'm a big proponent of dropping down a missionary unawares.
It is interesting what tactics some missionaries will use
to
draw a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can have something to report.
Right. Mm-hmm. All those things are very important. One other thing I didn't mention here, and that's a crisis of some kind. That's another thing that can be a really big blow. An assault. There's been missionaries' lives been raped, or children kidnapped, things like that. Sometimes that will knock them out. Or knock them to a different place. Some people will say, well, they ought to be able to handle that.
Mm.
Well, one of the things that I do in my crisis management, when I teach on that, on missions, is I think that one of the things that we're good about solving crises, but we're not good about member care.
Mm.
In crisis management, member care means taking care of the person after the crisis. And that needs to be considered a lot more. And, I know that in some situations, there are churches that, okay, they're through it now. Or they had a kidnapping scare, or they had a theft, or they had all those stuff. No, I'm a firm believer that, okay, if, and the pastors have to be really on top of this and say, well, how's your wife doing after that instance where they thought you were going to be kidnapped?
Mm.
Well, you know good well she's not going to be doing well. She thought her husband was kidnapped for about a day.
Yeah.
Or he was missing. I was in a situation one time in Cuba where I got into a situation where there was no way I could communicate. I got isolated and there was no phone service and stuff like that. So I didn't check in for several days. And my father got worried. When my father gets worried, and he called my wife, and all of a sudden everybody was, you know. And so when I did finally check in, everyone was, okay, fine. But for a while, for about 24 hours, everybody was really nervous. I thank the Lord for that. I appreciate their concern about me. But those kind of things, then, my wife still talks about it today. Nothing happened. But in her mind, a lot happened. You see what I'm saying? That has to be dealt with.
Yeah.
That has to be dealt with all the time. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Do you see some missionaries getting discouraged or going off the field because the home church isn't supporting them properly?
I have seen some situations where the home church cuts them off to where they have nothing to live on if they have to come home.
Wow.
I'm talking about, yeah, that's minor compared to some situations. There are some situations, I know a missionary, they really felt bad because the pastor was always promising to come visit him and never would. But then when the pastor's son became a missionary to England, he was over there right away. So the pastor really felt slighted because he said, well, this is not consistent. He promised me for 6 years he'd come visit me, and all of a sudden now he's running off to England when the son's over there. That's not right.
No, sir.
Mm-hmm. So.
Brother Bruce, this may not even be on your subject, but I think we lost a missionary under my ministry because of a strong-willed wife who would not submit to the...
I know the pastor said what?
Huh?
It's not just, not just missionaries, it's pastors too.
Right. She, I knew there was a problem. He went into deputation. It looked like the problem was over. I think she was just on a high of visiting churches. And then when they got to the field, it reared its head again. And
talk about. Show his family here.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
If I were sending a missionary again, I think I would require some period of service in the local church,
mm-hmm.
where he's there every day, and he sees.
You need to see where the problem's going to be at. You capture all that, or you be aware of it. We have a situation here in our church. We have a missionary candidate. He wanted to go to Honduras to work with me, and we were getting him ready, and they had a problem with their children that were very disobedient and uncontrollable. And we began talking to him. You've got to solve this problem. You need to solve it. And I sat down with him, had lessons, we talked about the fact that God in the home, how discipline in the home. We went through a lot of effort, but it was becoming obvious that it was not working. And we knew that our church would not vote to send them to the mission field because of that, because in the church, their children have such a bad testimony. They weren't even teenagers yet.
Yeah.
And so he got frustrated and left and went to another church and sent him right away.
Wow.
The oldest daughter got pregnant on the field. Knocked everything out. So it's a major failure. It's got to be solved before you go.
That's true. That's what I was trying to say.
And I think that he never should have gone to the field because of that. He's one of these people that we had to wash out because they never met the qualifications. Okay, our time's up. Guess what, Jeff?
Just off the top of your mind, just flow of conscience, besides mission trips, what are some other ways of recruiting potential?
I don't really have any other ideas right now. Do you have anything you can add?
Well, it's just because this is all over the United States as we're traveling,
mm-hmm.
and there's less and less people being called to preach or maybe surrendering.
Mm-hmm.
Less, you know, maybe God's still calling, but not as many people are surrendering.
Amen.
And it's just even other churches that have historically been sending out missionaries is less and less,
mm-hmm.
and it's just from coast to coast, north to south. I'm just seeing just a dearth of new people coming.
I agree with you. And we're sitting here pulling our hair out how we solve this. I have one opinion on this, but it's not a good one. I think the Lord might be removing his hand of blessing from America and putting it in another country.
Yeah.
And that other country is going to be the ones who are sending missionaries instead of America.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but I think that's what the Lord is going to end up doing. And I'm seeing that in Latin America especially, I'm seeing them start to send missionaries all over the world that I've never seen before. My mouth is a gate at what they're starting to do, out of Mexico especially. Right, brother?
Yes, sir.
We're starting to see missionaries come out of Mexico, going to Mongolia, to Israel, to Africa.
Man.
It's happening.
Praise the Lord.
I'm going to be out in a few weeks going down to Chiapas. I've got 25 young people who want to become missionaries want to be trained.
Amen.
Out of the Chiapas churches.
Yeah. Amen. We talk about this in our school meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got a few on the English side, but man, on the Spanish side.
On the Spanish side, that's where our school is growing.
How the Lord's blessing.
Mm-hmm. So I hate to see it,
mm-hmm.
but my feeling is that God is beginning to move his hand of.
Because I've had this conversation with a number of pastors who are expressing the same thing.
Yeah, we're all worried about it.
Mm-hmm. Where are they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're all worried about it. It's a problem.
And people are going to Bible college, but mm-hmm. even those who go to Bible college, even that end up in full-time service in some capacity, well, has drastically...
I would think the Bible colleges are seeing a drop. In,
yes, yeah, they are.
The Bible colleges are seeing a drop. It's not that we're having... I'm watching schools, and I knew that A person in school I went to had 5,000, they're down to 3,000 now. I don't know which one in Pensacola.
Not sure with Pensacola, but West Coast is down to about 400.
They're doing pretty good.
No,
they're dropping?
They had 1,000.
They had 1,000, they're down to 400.
Yes, sir.
Whoa.
That's a big drop.
Our church's school from our high from just before COVID now is probably down 70%.
70%.
70%. I was just going to say from furlough. Mm-hmm. From furlough traveling to churches, we are really shocked.
Mm-hmm.
When we go in some churches that were once vibrant,
mm-hmm.
and actually I'm worried about our support in some ways because
mm-hmm.
these churches are shrinking,
mm-hmm.
and there's not the young people in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone where the Sunday school rooms are empty in many churches,
mm-hmm.
and it's depressing. So I think that probably explains some of that.
Right.
And also, some churches
get back
don't
over
there. Missionaries.
Mm-hmm. Start that digital door knocking.
Yeah, there's that too. Is where, yeah.
But it just.
Well, I'm done on this. I, of course, there's always so much more you can cover, but that's it for now. Thank you for that. Comment and also that question, Brother Jeffrey. I think it's a very pertinent one, and I don't have an answer. Just like you don't either, do you? And every one of us here is aware of it, and we haven't found the answers.
Well, we do know what the Lord says.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Gain.